This podcast is brought to you in part by The Pop Insider. The Pop Insider has all the latest in news, merch reviews, and other geeky goodness. Whether you're a wizard, a Sith Lord, or a superhero, fuel your fandom at thepopinsider.com.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1.
Hey, geeksters, I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken. And Kylan just hurt himself somehow.
Yeah, that's the second time I said it. I said it the first time, dude. You didn't hear me?
No, I didn't hear it at all. You were too far away from the microphone or something.
Am I? Anyway, you found Geek Watch 1. How?
What'd you do?
I jacked himself up.
I jacked myself up. I have a cabinet next to me, and I moved my chair. I pinched my pinky between my armrest and the knob, and it wasn't fun.
Oh, that's the worst part, because that's the hardest place to actually get it. That knob is not. Right. It's a pretty small target to hit.
Yeah.
That's how good he is.
So how are we all doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm alive.
Missing a pinky, but he's alive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah. So Vicky and I have spent... Now, Geeksters, next week we won't be here because Vicky and I are actually going on vacation. We get to go once a year, and ours actually, since we're camping, we get to actually still do it.
Yeah.
So, but... This whole weekend, we've been sitting around and watching a lot of television.
Yep.
It was like everybody dropped something this weekend.
The coming up weekend's going to be worse.
Yeah. In the next couple of weekends, finally stuff is dropping.
End of month, beginning of month, so a lot of things were dropping for the weekend. And right. Yeah, there was a lot to catch up on.
Yep.
That, as Vicky was saying, August in general, there's a lot of stuff. I think it's all the stuff that finished filming right before the pandemic is all dropping in August. Yeah. Because we're still got The Boys are coming. What else do we have? There was something else coming out on the 15th, too. Mm-hmm. I know DC Universe is finally dropping their Justice League Dark Apocalypse War on the service, so I can watch that, the animated movie.
Lucifer is coming this month.
Huh?
The season 5 of Lucifer is coming.
Okay.
And... The Boys is the beginning of September, so
yeah.
Almost August.
Mm-hmm.
What else is this month? There's a few things. I can't think of what else.
Yeah. Well, this weekend we had Muppets Go, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, because Miss Dawn and I got to see it, and Vicky listened to it. We had Transformers: War for Cybertron Siege. We had Umbrella Academy, which in 2 weeks when we come back, we will be talking Umbrella Academy.
That gives you plenty of time to watch it.
Yeah. Trying to think what else dropped. There was a couple other things too. I think those were the big ones.
Right.
But it's there was a lot of new, and it was series stuff. It wasn't as much movies.
No.
Right.
No.
So, I mean, we watched old stuff because we finally sat down and watched African Queen from 1951. So, Some of those old movies are awesome.
They are. They are. One of my all-time favorites is the Mark of Zorro with Tyrone Power.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably my all-time favorite movies, and honestly, it's one of those movies that, regardless of where it is, if it's on, I'm watching it.
Yes,
yeah. It's probably, I think, it's almost like the ideal blueprint for any origin story.
Well,
it's probably, if you follow what's laid out in that, you're golden.
Well, him and Errol Flynn together did so many movies between all the swashbuckling films, all the Robin Hood movies, the Marco Zorro. The two of them were action adventure before that actually ever became a genre.
Right. Well, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. as well. He was in there.
And it's funny when you watch these old movies, how many have the exact same actors or the people behind the scenes were the exact same for all the movies with those actors.
Right.
They would just move from one movie to the next and they just kept making them.
And I finally ended up binging all of which one was it that we finished? Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek. Yeah.
So I was looking for something else, and so there was a series that's now it's a Canadian series that's ended. It was called X Company, and it's about this team of it's set during World War II. There's about a team of...
Based on a true story.
Based on a true story. Because what people may not know is that prior to operations being moved to Great Britain, intelligence operations training, all that good stuff actually happened in Canada, just north of Toronto. And so, my mother-in-law had given me this book for Christmas one year because she knew I liked that sort of thing. And I don't think she realized that she created an obsession for me because I think prior to that, like, I was kind of interested in World War II intelligence stuff, but not a lot. I know more or less how it Bond kind of came out of that because of Ian Fleming. But after reading that book, I would just find anything that I could about Camp X. So anyway, there was a series. It's now over. So we started watching that.
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu, and okay. It's weird because you have a series that is set during World War II, but it's almost filmed in modern style. Like honestly, if you watch Treadstone, the style that Treadstone is filmed in is almost how this is filmed in. So a lot of they treat radar technology and sonar technology and all this stuff that they had available to them, they treat it as being cutting edge technology, which for them it was. But for a lot of times when you know you watch stuff now, they kind of treat it, oh, they're using radar, no big deal. But it's like it's on the edge of your seat excitement. Like Dawn actually is watching it with, she doesn't really care for this sort of thing.
Mostly it's because I'm recognizing all the actors. I'm like, wait, he's Ted on Schitt's Creek. Wait, that's Dauphine from Orphan Black.
Yeah.
Wait. This...
So if you watch any Canadian series for the most
part,
you will
recognize at least half the actors.
Yeah. So.
But it's kind of cool. It's about their operations. It's about the training at the actual camp, and then them actually using it out in the field against Nazis.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool, and the fact that you know it, especially. Now that it's on Hulu, it'll introduce a lot of people to the fact that it happened from Canada.
Yeah.
You know? Which...
Yeah. I mean, like, in the book I was reading, it talked about how they would take recruits and send them into town and send them to, like, the local bars and pubs, and they would give them an assignment, like, get a stranger's address. And, you know, so you could only pass the test if you left the bar with that person's address or some piece of information from them. And so they were actually sending them out and putting them among the civilians and using the civilians as part of tests that, from my understanding, is something that still goes on today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That type of testing is – I actually know someone who has done the training – or has trained people in this, and that's the type of thing. I think it was somewhere in the middle of Europe. I don't know any of the details, obviously, but part of the training was they get dropped off outside of a town with nothing on them at all. No ID, no money, no nothing, and they get like a week to come back home.
Yep.
So you basically got to bluff your way out of town, out of and into wherever you got to get to.
Sounds like a movie.
Yeah. But I've heard the story from the guy who was doing the training, showing the people how to do it.
Right.
And part of that is doing it with them.
Yeah,
they probably did all over the states and all that.
Oh yeah.
There was a series that was on AMC that's ended now. It's called Turn, and it's about intelligence operations during World War II. Revolutionary War. So the thing is, I did a paper in college about this, and it's on a disc somewhere. So there's no way I could pull this thing up. I wish I could go back and find that old paper. Just to see how off the mark I was, because I was – so this is following a guy who is a cabbage farmer.
Excitement for you right there.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those things like this guy –
Can you imagine that pitch meeting? I want to do a show about a Revolutionary War cabbage farmer.
I believe he's an actual historical figure because it – It follows.
I don't dispute that. I'm just saying.
I mean, but think about it. Who would look at a cabbage farmer as being a spy? That is hey, like the least.
True. That guy just got his own pop figure.
Yeah.
The cabbage farmer.
There you go.
The one in Avatar The Last Airbender, one of the newest pop figures from Avatar The Last Airbender was the Cabbage Farmer. If you've ever seen the series, you know who this guy is.
Sometimes it's about the Cabbage Farmer.
But that's
there
right.
There you go.
It's a guy that, have you ever watched the show, Kylan?
No.
It's on my list. No.
Randomly, every once in a while, when they're in a town, this giant, this cabbage cart would get smashed and beat over, and it's this one guy that happens to be traveling town to town, and his cabbage crop keeps getting smashed every time that something gets smashed.
Oh, so there you go. That's the series cameo, the cabbage farmer.
Kind of like, was it Cleveland Brown in the Family Guy? Whenever something happens, he's in the bathtub.
No.
And
the bathtub goes down.
Yeah.
So there you go. Kylan's catching up on war shows.
Yes, I'm catching up on war shows.
Well, have you ever? Did you? I don't know if we've ever talked about it on here. Did you ever catch the show Fleming, The Man Who Would Be Bond, with Dominic Cooper?
I saw. Now there was a movie that was back in the 90s. That was just called Spy Master.
Yeah, that's it. I remember seeing that too. No, this one I think was BBC, but I just looked it up. You can buy it all kinds of places. There's only one season, but you can stream it on Hoopla if you borrow it from the library through Hoopla. I remember Vicky and I watched this, and it was awesome. And it's all about Ian Fleming. I mean, it's obviously it's got some liberties taken, but that's just to make it TV. But it's still the idea of Ian Fleming back in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
See, I will watch that.
That is definitely something you'd want to see.
I enjoy it. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, she doesn't like spy stuff at all either. So at some point, Kylan, you and I are going to have like a spy weekend, and we're going to sit down and watch Bond movies and everything else, and the girls can go figure out what they want to do later.
Read?
Yeah, we'll be reading.
There you go.
I still keep threatening that at some point I want to get a projector and a giant screen, and we'll just do backyard drive-in.
There you go.
That'd be fun.
So, but what else have you guys been doing?
That's pretty much it. Just kind of
surviving.
Yeah.
Around the house.
Yeah, keeping busy. And
how's the remodeling coming?
Oh, it's good. I mean, I've been doing bits and pieces while I await the return of Ron. You know, because I have to accessorize the bathroom, so I've been getting the pieces to do that and repainting them to match what I want, because everything comes in white.
Oh, yeah.
But aside from that, it's going pretty well.
Cool. So you're doing your Cyberling tour. Now, anybody who isn't in the area doesn't know about Stan Hewitt Hall. Did you guys hear the story about that place here in Akron? That it was the Cyberling family who created Goodyear bought an English manor home from all the way over in England and brought it over to America brick by brick in the 1930s and stone by stone and had it rebuilt. But I guess the story goes took them a year to build this, to bring it over and rebuild it. But while they did that, the family took a vacation around the world to furnish the home.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So that's why every room has a different like area of the world, a different location. Every room was totally different like that. And that's why it's such unique decorating inside.
And if I had those kind of funds, I would be traveling the world to you know the countries we're allowed to go to.
Exactly. But that's what you're doing now, though. By as the things are getting built, you're buying everything to put in there.
That's true. But see, my excuse at least is for the bathroom. Everything got ripped out and trashed.
Yeah.
So there was nothing there. And I have to start from scratch.
Hey, a blank canvas is always the best way to start.
It is. And it's already, I mean, the bathroom's halfway done and it already looks better than the finished bathroom we had before.
That is true.
I'm going to tell you.
Other than that, everybody check out our website real quick before we move on. www.geekwatch1.com. On there you can find all of our friends, anybody who's been on the show. We have a link to all of them, all of our past shows. Huh?
Maybe not everyone.
Well, I thought I said everyone. You sure?
I've missed some, I'm sure.
Never mind.
Hey, if you find someone on the show that's not on the website, let Miss Dawn know. She still wants everybody to talk to her.
Yeah, I can't track all these things sometimes, okay?
She needs someone to fill out the Geekwatch 1 wiki for us.
That's right. Add to my job.
So check all that out. Also on there you can find links to our friend Charlie Murphy with Stray Dog and the Akron Pickle.
At this point it is the American Pickle as far as it is.
It's the pickle of America.
Right.
I think you're right, because I don't believe that I've had any pickle that I wanted more than
Charlie's pickle.
I'm serious. I'm like,
Kylan's craving Charlie's pickle. That's all. We need
it's
say.
Been a while since we ordered from Charlie.
Yeah, it has been.
I did check on his Facebook. He's actually directing everybody to DoorDash now. So that's the only way he's delivering, I guess, at this point.
Okay.
So,
well, but, you know what that means? He's getting so much business that he can't deliver himself anymore.
That's true.
Good problems.
That's
good
right. And I think that it's nice to think that part of that was from us.
Of course it's
all
from
of
us.
It. All
that's
of
right.
It.
All so look up.
Everybody yourself and order from Charlie this week at least once. At least.
That's right.
At least maybe a lunch and a dinner if you wish. I'm just saying.
We got to get together, figure out what the Geek Watch 1 sandwich is, and then we'll put that on the menu and see how many people order it. Because Charlie will do it for us. You know he will.
It'll have to have pulled pork on it, I can tell you that.
Well, yeah. Is there any other way to do it?
That's right.
There's
That's
no
right.
other way to do it. It's just.
Well, I mean, he does do, like, Monte Cristo sandwiches. So we can kind of do a Geek Watch 1 version of that.
Yeah. Oh. See, he does his. There's two ways to do a Monte Cristo. He does his where it uses the French toast as the bread. I really like the one where they actually make it regular, then batter dip, deep fry the whole thing.
But don't you smash and chill it overnight?
Yeah, that's in order to do it the deep fried way. You got to actually you make the sandwich the day before, stretch wrap it tight, and put it in the fridge so that when you put it in the batter, it stays together.
Right, right.
But dude, those ones are amazing. If you can find one done that way,
that's not as viable for a quick order restaurant.
Yeah, no. Yeah, but it is amazing if you can get it.
Okay, we
so
can
we'll come up with something. So, but if you go, check out Charlie, like I said, look up Stray Dog Akron, the Akron Pickle, or Cafe 388. All three will get you to Charlie Murphy. They do deliver, and he can, some of the sauces and things, he can deliver probably anywhere in the country, if not the world. You got to talk to him, though.
Yeah, he does ship the sauces and mustards. He has a separate site for those, and he does ship them, so...
And if there's something if there's something that you like or you don't like that's on one of the dogs or sandwiches or not, you ask him and he will cater.
Oh yeah, he'll customize it.
He'll customize it for you, no problem. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And order yourself a cookie or two because honestly,
oh my gosh,
those cookies are good.
Yeah. Look, I will tell you guys. Like honestly, like generally, once I'm on the reservation and I'm eating clean. It takes a lot for me to actually go off. Charlie makes me struggle. Like, I struggle when it comes to Charlie because I've had his stuff. I know how good it is. And I don't know if I want to miss out on certain things from him. I'm just saying that his food is just that good.
Kylan, that's when we sit down and talk to him because we're talking about possibly Geek Watch 1 specials here and there. We'll have a Kylan's clean meal. And have worked with him on something that's totally clean, but it's still Charlie Murphy.
Could do that. Yeah. You could just ask him if he would take some of the bacon and basically layer it, basket weave it, to make it as bread instead of bread. And, you know, I'm just saying. It's just an idea.
It can happen.
I have plenty of ideas for non-bread sandwiches. I've used them. So.
You can make a bacon taco.
Yes, you can.
Yeah?
I'm a stop.
When they weave, I've seen all kinds of stuff. When they weave bacon and turn, you could make anything out of that. Another clean one, he could actually make, similar to what Vicky made last week. She made,
it was just a few days ago.
A couple days ago. It was, we had some apple Gouda.
Chicken.
Yeah, apple Gouda chicken sausage over at Costco. And she chopped up Brussels sprouts in, like, quarters. And then some cauliflower. A little bit of olive oil, a little bit of spices, and throw it on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing, dude. You get one of the grill baskets, you just grill it all together. Oh, dude, and it's totally clean because it's just a little bit of olive oil. The rest is just straight veggies and sausage.
Well, except for the apple in the sausage.
Well,
yeah, we can.
It wasn't that much. Yeah. You tasted Gouda more than you did the apple.
But you can, or you can use whatever sausage you want, you know?
But we're steadily finding chicken sausage that we like, too.
Yeah, that's hard to find. It's hard to find a good chicken sausage.
Right.
Because usually it doesn't have the right consistency, or it's too dense, or, you know.
And plus it's chicken. I'd rather go for pork or beef.
Yeah, well.
Real.
So.
We find a lot of them just really crumbly.
Yeah. But check that out. Also, check out on our site our friends at the Pop Insider, the Toy Insider, and the Toy Book, which we had James on last week from that. Check them out for all your day-to-day geeky goodness. You can you check us out once a week for the weekly roundup. Well, they have a day-to-day roundup for you.
That's right. And Toy Insider and Toy Book, especially if you're in line for toys or if you're a parent looking for gifts for your kids and stuff, especially the Toy Book, they actually give recommendations. They give specifics about toys, ratings, that kind of thing, safety issues. Those are good go-to places, especially, you know, as we get further into the year and the holidays come up.
Right.
And remember, as James was saying last week, they're in the process, within the next couple of weeks, they're going to be putting out the holiday toy guide.
Right.
So get your subscription now so you can get the giant toy book.
We're less than 4 months away.
Just shut up. No, don't say it. We're not, because we're not having any holiday season this year. It's not happening.
But we have holidays in our hearts.
We're all stuck inside. We're not doing anything.
We can have holidays in our hearts.
In our heart. Yeah, that's where you're always supposed to have it.
Hey, since we're all stuck in the house anyway, no one's coming to our houses, that means we could have holiday right now. We could put up our Christmas trees and all that stuff.
That means more candy for us.
A friend of mine did that. A friend of mine said,
I don't have to share.
I'm having Christmas. And she put up a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
I was like, you know.
That was actually a big thing when all this started. Easter time, a lot of people were putting up their Christmas
stuff. Or you don't put the Christmas tree up and nobody judges you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, Kylan, our wives are always on the same wavelength. Can you catch that? Because Dawn's the same way.
Kylan's breaking my stuff over here.
Well, most of the time, I'm the one who has to get the tree out and everything and put it up, so decorate it and everything. So if I don't want to do it, boom, you're not done.
See, I can't because most things bigger than me. Our Christmas box is bigger than me.
Yeah. So, but what else is going on in the world of geekdom before we go into some of this other stuff that we actually watched this weekend?
Okay, well, I have a couple stories left over from last week because we really didn't do any news since we had James on with us.
Yeah.
But I also have a new story. One of the new stories is the fact that Comic-Con at Home massively underperformed on social media. And this was like strictly social media, not necessarily the interaction it got with the videos and stuff. But when it came to engagement, Comic-Con at Home performed abysmally compared to last year's live event. A report said that tweets about the con were down 95%. Just under 94,000 tweets were made about the event over the five-day period for this year, compared to 1.7 million last year. So people may have been watching the panels and stuff, but they didn't care enough to tweet about it because it wasn't exciting. What was the difference? Like, anyone could watch the panels.
Yeah, and it wasn't a captive audience at Comic-Con.
Well, exactly. And some of the biggest panels had comments turned off because so much of it was pre-recorded. So fans couldn't even interact. And the panels that you had where fans were interacting, a lot of them were pre-recorded anyways and set up. And it's kind of like no one knew how to get in touch to be able to interact that way.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a lot of big studios that skipped it. So it overall did not do as well as Comic-Con had hoped. And of course, it didn't bring in really much of any money for them either, if you think about it.
It probably didn't bring any money at all for them. Unless it was just ad revenue.
Yeah, it would have been the ads. That would have been it. And the fact that, you know, there were some, like, Twitter or some companies and stuff sponsoring some of the panels. You know, that's how they got the money out of it this time. Mm. Because really, once you were watching the panel, you had to sit through mentions of whatever company they were talking about, and it's like go use these hashtags on Twitter. Like, I got so sick of it on the New Mutants panel, kept talking about hashtags and like, look at the emojis you can get for all the characters now and blah blah. I'm like, shut up and tell me about the movie. But you had no choice because you could skip ahead, but you didn't know how far to skip ahead to actually get details and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, not as good a return as they thought this year, but that's not exactly surprising.
It's still much better than they would have had if they just canceled.
Yeah, I mean, they still got engagement. They still got people involved, and they still had a lot of views on some of these videos. So it's not like there was nothing going on.
The thing that will be interesting to see will be a lot of the big companies that skipped Comic-Con are actually going to do their own events, like DC's Fandom coming up in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And I'm sure Marvel's going to come up with something. Everybody's going to do their own and seeing what kind of engagement they get on those.
Right, exactly.
Now I'm curious to see if New York is going to follow suit.
If they're going to go online?
Yeah.
I think they will. I think there's no question that New York's going to go online. I mean,
they kind of have to.
We know there's no way they're going to hold it.
No.
But
well, the interesting thing is New York has more of the straight comic book vibe. The panels are more right. are known more not as pop culture panels as much. People go there to see the comic creators and see what they're doing. And that's where a lot of the comic companies will actually announce what's coming for the next year. Whereas San Diego, it's more media.
Yeah.
Right.
So you may get a totally different, you may do much better because all this time, if people haven't noticed, the comic book creators and comic book companies have already been engaging with their fans since this all started. They've been all over social media and everything else, so the fans are already ready and primed to watch panels on the online.
And right. plus, a lot of the comic industry-related stuff hasn't been as delayed.
No, it
hasn't. Because, you know, writers and artists, they work from home anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
They either
do it digital or they scan it in and ship it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there may be a 1 or 2 month delay in releasing certain things because of publication issues, but the artists themselves are keeping up with it and they're actually getting stuff out there. So it's possible that New York Comic Con will be a much more relevant Comic Con because mm-hmm. things are a little more on schedule.
Right. Well, so. I know because of one of the panels that I watched, the Liefeld panel, I don't know how I missed this, but I found out about the Snake Eyes series being out. So I actually, after the panel, I went to Things from Another World and ordered it, you know, from there because I didn't see the book at my shop. Of course, I saw it at the shop last week, but I already ordered it by that point. So it's okay. But, you know, so I benefited from the panel in that way. But, I mean, a lot of the other stuff, you know, because it was either shows that had already been in production or stuff that was coming up.
Movies that keep getting delayed and delayed and delayed. Yeah,
so there wasn't a lot. There were some things.
We're not talking about Tenet here.
No.
No. There was a lot of stuff that they couldn't even talk about. Like, which one was it we watched? And they couldn't. They had to be careful about what they were talking about.
Was it Hellstrom?
Yeah, Hellstrom. Like, so number one.
Oh, that's out this month, actually. Hellstrom's in August. It hits Hulu, I think, doesn't it? Or is it?
No, that was October. It's October.
Hellstrom's October, sorry.
So, like, Hellstrom, number one, I didn't realize that Hellstrom was still coming out. I was glad about that, but there was not a lot that they could tell you.
No.
You know, you got up, but you did get
they
to see.
They only had one. They had the one trailer they dropped during the panel.
Yeah, yeah, the trailer,
and
that was it.
They couldn't tell you really where things were going
no.
from there.
No. So. And I mean, at least the panel that was for the boys, they had enough to talk about the production of it, mm-hmm. but they really couldn't give you a lot about season two, which
was
understandable.
Not the specifics, but you already knew the characters, whereas Hellstrom couldn't even really tell you about the characters because it gave too much away.
Yeah, I mean, you have no point of reference unless you're familiar with the character from the comics, but even then, that's not given a lot.
So I think New York will make a difference. I think sometime this month you're going to get announcements from New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it's the beginning of October,
right?
So you have to, like, now is when they're doing the final planning. So
because
if you think about it, it was about 2 months before San Diego that we got the announcement that they were going completely virtual. So.
Right.
It'll be about the 2 month mark, and sometime within the next couple weeks, I think we'll find out for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anything for the fall is going to be coming out this month, we'll hear about.
Yes. Yes. But in other news, we have an interesting agreement between Universal and AMC Theaters. You may recall earlier that AMC Theaters had a bit of a controversy with Universal where they were refusing to play their movies. Now they've reversed course and there's an agreement they've come to. A new deal has the theater chains only requiring Universal to have a 17-day exclusive on theatrical releases before the studio can release them through video on demand. And then AMC gets a chunk of those video on demand sales, which are now required to be premium rentals, hovering around the $20 range for a 24-hour span.
Yeah.
Now, in case you're not sure why this is a big deal, previously the standard basically saw agreements between studios and theaters having essentially a 90-day period of theater exclusivity. This is a big deal for blockbusters because, I mean, if you've got a massive, you know, comic book movie, because that's the real blockbusters we get now, you want them to be in the theater for at least a month, possibly 2 months, maybe 3 months, so you can make your money that way. Mm-hmm. And you're attracting the moviegoers instead of having them sit at home to watch the movie. So it's quite a big deal to go from 90-day exclusive to 17-day. That's barely 2 weeks. Like that, not like just a couple days past 2 weeks. That's nothing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the Universal movies usually they get about their 2 weeks, and they're done making major money in the theaters anyway for Universal stuff. Because you think Universal doesn't have any of the comic book movies or the major tentpoles.
The fact that it's Universal makes it not as big a deal.
Right.
I mean, Universal has some large properties because the Jurassic World series is all with them. Any of the those monster movies that they're trying to work on, which eventually they'll figure out how to do it.
Right. So it's, you know, it's not as big a deal as if it were, say, Disney or something coming up with this kind of deal. But not surprisingly, a lot of theater owners are not happy with this. Because it basically means they have to get all the bang for their buck within those first couple weeks, because there's no guarantee after that fact. But then again, a lot of people may not want to pay $20 to get a movie on their television for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like if you have a lot of people, if you have your whole family, maybe 4, 5, 6 people, okay, that might be worth it. But if it's only one or two people, then it's not necessarily worth paying the $20 to watch a movie at home.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure exactly when that takes effect, considering the current state of movie theaters. But
probably when they finally decide to open movie theaters.
Exactly. It'll either take place right away or, you know, soon after. Now, we all know that Netflix is producing season 3 of Cobra Kai. And at the end of August, on August 28th, you'll be able to watch seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's dropping. There's no premiere date for the third season yet, but Netflix won that big bidding war. And they've also announced plans to somehow expand the franchise. They haven't divulged any specifics, but I'm sure we can expect either a spinoff or perhaps an animated something or other, because Netflix is loving doing the animated thing right now with a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so end of this month, you can watch seasons 1 and 2 of Cobra Kai before season 3 comes out, probably next year sometime.
I did notice that Netflix already has, I believe, all 5 of the Karate Kid movies.
Yeah.
I know they have the 4 of the original. I don't know if they have the reboot or not. I know they had the 4 originals, the 3 with Ralph Macchio, the 1 with Hilary Swank, and I'm not sure if they have the new one with Jackie Chan or not.
Right.
But and I don't think they have the Karate Kid animated series, which most people don't even realize ever existed. But yes, there was a Karate Kid animated series for Saturday mornings.
And I tried to like it. I really did. Like it took place after Karate Kid 2.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, it just didn't sit well with
me. Work.
No.
Didn't work well. And that's why no one remembers it.
Right.
In more Netflix news, fans of The Witcher will be happy. Netflix has announced that it's getting a 6-part limited series called The Witcher Blood Origin that tells the story of the very first of their kind. Blood Origin is going to take place 1,200 years before the events of the current Witcher series that we've all watched on Netflix. Set in the elven world that's largely been lost to history, it'll focus on the events that led to the worlds of humans, elves, and monsters coming together, otherwise known as the Conjunction of the Spheres.
Okay.
This is not the only Witcher spinoff in the works. There's also The Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf, which is an anime that will tell the story of Geralt's mentor, Vesemir.
Oh, okay.
So there's going to be plenty for Witcher fans to watch in the coming couple of years, because it's not happening right now.
And knowing, seeing the quality of work that Netflix has done with their anime studios, that should be really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're really focusing on a lot of animated stuff, and especially in the realm of anime, is a big focus for them right now.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, how many animated shows are, you know, basically you just need the voice talent, and you know, people, you know, some of the voice actors are actually using their closets to record their stuff. So all you need is a script, people to do the recording. Send that in digitally. Mm-hmm.
Well, the nice thing is, in the last 10 to 12 years, most people that actually work mostly in voice actually have a studio built in their house anyway. They don't need a whole lot of space. Like, we podcast every week. I mean, this is not
you need a closet.
Studio quality.
You need a closet.
But a lot of these people have already built an actual recording studio so that they can work either work from home or they can work anywhere in the world.
Right.
And the other thing with being the animation, that a lot of them have continued working throughout everything that's going on, like Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
We watched the panel on that. They were talking about how they were just sending in all their recordings because the animators were working from home, the voice artists could work from home, and then everything just gets combined. And I mean, you don't get the interaction because a lot of times they do these things in the same room together. So you don't quite get the quality of interaction, but you still get all of the finished product.
Right.
That you can actually see all these animated series that'll kind of continue and not be as delayed as all the live action stuff.
Right.
Well, that I listen to James Arnold Taylor. He's like my favorite voice actor, James Arnold Taylor. And anybody who doesn't know, he's the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars. He's been the voice of Fred Flintstone off and on for years, but he's also the voice of Fox's animation, the narrator that does all the promos in between. He's that voice also. And he does all of the Fox promo stuff from home. Like, they'll schedule him for like 20 minutes a week because they don't for some reason they don't reuse that dialogue. They actually, for the promo spots are new every week, and he re-records it every week.
Okay.
And it's like 20 minutes a week. They just send him they send him his thing. He's already got everything ready to go, so when they dial in, he's like, okay, you ready to go? And he gives it to him, and that's it.
Nice job.
There you go.
So it's like, these, like I said, the voice actors who their job is voice actor, not just, I mean, these aren't actors, but the guys that don't worry about on camera as much are already set. They've been set up for years to do this. This is not a big thing. That's why, like you said, animation has not really slowed down.
Right.
No.
And I think that's where a lot of live action actors are suddenly realizing the benefits of doing voice acting.
Yeah.
And being able to do it from home in this time and. Because if you look, there's a lot of live-action actors' names popping up on animated series that you never thought you'd hear before.
True.
And sometimes it's ones that are spin-offs of their own characters from something else, but other times it's completely different, or it's guest spots, like doing something on Rick and Morty or something like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, that kind of thing. So
and a lot of there's people, a lot of people have extended their careers by doing this, by getting into voice. Everybody I've heard said, it's so much fun doing animation because you can do all these different characters that you could never do on screen because your face doesn't matter.
Right.
One thing that people would never notice, Tom Wilson has probably way more audio credits to his name than he does movies. And he was Biff in the Back to the Future movies. But he's done all kinds of animation. Clancy Brown is another one that has worked for years in animation.
Most people would actually recognize his voice before they'd recognize his face.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But the thing is, in a lot of cases, Clancy Brown doesn't even change his voice for a character. It's just him.
He doesn't need to because he's got an awesome voice.
Exactly.
He's not like a James Arnold Taylor that has to mimic everybody. Oh, another one. James is also Johnny Test. All those other ones. And he's also this really high-pitched Johnny Test.
Jeez.
Right.
And he can mimic all kinds of guys. That's where the real money is. If you can actually voice double someone, you're working all the time.
That's true. Another piece of news that's kind of interesting for those who'd like to do a bit of building. Lego is releasing art sets for adults. They are actually calling these art building sets, and there are four pop culture themes. You have Iron Man, Star Wars, The Beatles, and Marilyn Monroe. Iron Man's currently available for pre-order, and others are becoming available September 1st. The cost for a set is $119, which, if you're not familiar with Lego, may sound like a lot. If you're familiar with Lego, it's like, okay, that's average.
Yeah, that's about right for a normal full-size set.
Now, each set has approximately 3,000 single-dot bricks.
Holy moly!
Along with flats to build them on. Like, these are intended to be flat pieces, like artwork. So, size you is about a 15-inch square.
And if you actually go back to the people who know Lego, that is a really low price for that many bricks.
Yes.
Because there is an actual way to figure out an average price per brick for almost every Lego set. And they're all around, I think it's like 10 cents a brick or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the cool thing about this is every set has multiple image combinations that it gives you the instructions for to do like different views of Iron Man, for instance. Or for Marilyn Monroe, the one they're using is the iconic Andy Warhol portrait. Mm-hmm. And you have different versions of different color combinations of that portrait.
Yes, okay, cool.
So you actually get you can actually use the bricks that you get in different combinations to create the different ones. And if you actually buy multiple sets, I'm not sure if it's three or four sets you have to buy, but you get instructions to do a large rectangle of a completely different image of that character or person. Mm. So check Lego.com. You can get images there, further details. They even have some suggested music to listen to inspire you. But like I said, Iron Man's available now for pre-order. The rest are coming September 1st. And Lego.com, all the details. And
cool.
I'm not sure if they'll be available in stores, like widely available in stores, because they're kind of a specialized look, but definitely through the Lego website and probably the Lego store, if nothing else, if you have any versions of the Lego store near you.
Mm-hmm. Or Walmart.com, because if you check that site, they got everything for some reason. I mean, you can buy caskets on Walmart.com.
It's true. Walmart.com will give you everything and probably for a cheaper price.
Yeah.
Use those gift cards, people.
It's insane, some of the stuff. I mean, you can buy cruises on Walmart.com. I mean, what?
Only to get stranded.
Yeah.
I think Walmart has their own, like, travel agency or something.
It would not surprise me.
Yeah. And an interesting movie news, because I had to include this one because it's so completely ridiculous. Dave Franco is going to be playing Vanilla Ice in an upcoming biopic.
Okay.
So currently the film is titled To the Extreme, and you know that, like, back in the 90s, if you know anything about Vanilla Ice, he actually had a biopic called Cold as Ice that was kind of like a dramatized version of his life that was completely ridiculous and really was not his life at all.
Was that I thought that was just like an action movie kind of thing. That's supposed to have been his life?
A little bit. It's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh.
This project will take it more seriously, you know, in the vein of Freddie Mercury's Bohemian Rhapsody, that kind of thing. A little more realism to the life of the man.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, Dave Franco has been speaking with Rob Van Winkle, who is Vanilla Ice, in case you didn't know. He also has a home renovation show, in case you didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's because that's what he's been doing since he's done rapping.
Exactly. That's where he's making his money now. But basically, the synopsis lets you know that you follow him from being a high school dropout selling cars in Dallas to having his first hip-hop single topping the Billboard charts with Ice Ice Baby, and how he struggles with stardom, extortion attempts, and selling out as he makes music history. I really don't think it's going to be as fun and interesting as Rocket Man, but you never know.
Or Bohemian Rhapsody.
I swear they better include ninja rap. That's all.
That's
I'm right. Saying.
Yeah, ninja rap. I need to find out what happened. Why?
That's got to be the selling out part of this. Like, it's got to have ninja rap.
Go ninja. Go ninja. Ninja go. Yeah.
So there you go. Get Ice Ice Baby in your earworm for the day. Anyway, my last news from this week was a biggie for television. They came out with the 2020 Emmy nominations. Usually we don't talk a lot about these because the preferred programs for us don't often get recognized.
Except
that seems to have been, huh?
That's it. That's the only thing that got recognized this year.
Yeah, pretty much. This year, almost entirely exclusively the stuff we love. HBO's Watchmen swept everything with 26 nominations across 19 categories, which is absolutely huge for any show. But the fact that this is a comic book show makes it even bigger and better.
Exactly. And what's cool is if you do the math on that, that's 7 of those categories. They got nominated twice.
Yes, exactly. Because you have everything from Outstanding Limited Series, Outstanding Writing for a Limited Series. You have both Jeremy Irons and Regina King for Best Lead Actor, Lead Actress in a Limited Series. So like this is pretty huge, and we know how great a show it was. So the fact that it's going to win something, there's no way it can't win something against that many nominations.
Yeah.
Now, the other interesting one, considering all the ownership it now has, is that the Walt Disney Company got 145 nominations across the board. Now, this total, with some overlap because of the categories, but this included 47 nominations for Disney Television, 36 for ABC, 33 for FX, 26 for Hulu, 19 for Disney Plus, which is impressive for its first year, 9 for National Geographic, 3 for ESPN, and 1 for the Disney Channel. And not surprisingly, Disney Plus's nominations include The Mandalorian, racking up nominations across 13 categories.
Wasn't it like 17 nominations?
Yeah. And it was across 13 categories, including Outstanding Drama, highlighting Outstanding Music Composition for a Series, which, I mean, it does have some awesome music every chapter. And even for Giancarlo Esposito's Moff Gideon in Outstanding Guest Actor category.
Wow.
And of course, not surprisingly, it also got a nod for Outstanding Visual Effects.
Right.
So again, that's going to be something that's definitely going to win at least a few categories, considering all the nominations. And I just wanted to mention, because it's a show that Kylan and I love, and its final season will be coming to Netflix this fall, that Schitt's Creek scored 15 nominations for its 6th and final season, including Best Comedy Series and nominations for the lead actors of Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, and Dan Levy, Eugene's son, who plays David on the show and is also writer, director, producer, got nominated for directing and writing. And other nominations included Outstanding Casting, Contemporary Costumes, and Contemporary Hairstyle. So it got a lot of nominations. I was just happy it got a lot of nominations for its final season.
I thought the Emmys was usually in the spring with all the rest of the award shows.
No. It's in September.
Okay. Well, actually, that kind of makes sense if officially the end of the TV season is in the spring.
Yeah, because that's why they do it that way. It's not like it's from beginning of calendar year.
Right.
So the awards will be on Sunday, September 20th, and this might actually be a show worth watching for a change.
Is this going to be a Zoom award show?
I don't know. They haven't announced how they're going to have it yet.
Because they're not going to have the big gala event thing and the red carpet and all that stuff. There's no way.
Absolutely cannot have the big gala event, but they could have announcements and performances. You know, because they could have performances of whoever is nominated for various musical things.
Mm-hmm.
They could properly socially distance presenters. They could just have like one presenter per category sort of thing and not actually have an audience. But or it could, like you said, it could just be done via Zoom and it could be a very weird award show.
Right.
You just get the cutout stand-ups of people and stick them in the chairs.
Yeah. Do you like baseball? Have the whole big, like you said, have you seen what baseball's been doing a lot? Like behind home plate, they'll have big cardboard cutouts of the team legends and stuff in the stands.
There you go. It's not like you don't have images of all the actors. You could put them all in the chairs.
Exactly.
And,
they do it anyways, but usually it's just a card.
Well, Fox Sports, they've actually been putting in virtual crowds when if they do like the big national games on broadcast. They'll actually, if you watch the outfield during plays, you'll see where they digitally superimpose crowds into the stands. It's kind of weird looking, but it's kind of cool.
Well, it's sort of like the UFC have Fight Island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's weird because they have, you know, the combatants there, right? And then they have, like, the ring people on the outside of it. And that's it, and it just feels weird.
That's a weird thing to that they still have ring girls.
Yeah.
Well,
that was just be for the sake of the crowd, letting them know what part of the fight you're in or whatever, right. Round you're in. But I'm just like, they still have a ring girl just walking around and sitting down.
Well, at least with baseball, they're actually piping regular crowd noise over the speakers, usually in the stands. So the microphones for the announcers and stuff are still picking that up. So, and for the players actually hear the crowd, even though there's nobody out there. I mean, it's, a lot of them said they've done it both ways. They've been there both ways. They've been there with no noise at all, and it's weird. It feels like a practice game, and that's it. But with the crowd noise, at least it helps the feel.
Right.
And like I said, wrestling has actually figured out how to do it, but that's because they actually have the crowds outside the barriers are actually the rest of the people that have already been tested and are in the facility anyway. So if you're not in the ring working, you're outside being a crowd.
Right.
And these are guys that know when they're supposed to cheer and everything else, so it makes it feel a whole lot more like an actual live event.
Right.
So, but for something like the Emmys, there's no way they could do something like that. Now, piping in crowd noise from before, you could do that.
Problem,
true.
So it'd be interesting to see what they come up with. I mean, the Emmys is supposed to be the best of the best for TV. Well, let's see what the best of the best for TV can figure out on doing a show without people there.
Well, and the other thing I'm wondering is if they're actually just going to pre-record everything and show it on the 20th, kind of like they do with some awards. Mm-hmm. If someone can't be at the show and they send a message, are they just going to get everyone to send messages in the category just in case they win? Or are they going to pre-record it and say, you've won and you've got to give your speech, so send us something?
I think with the Oscars, if I remember, I heard somewhere where actually they do, if you're not going to be there, you send in an acceptance, whether you don't know if you actually won or not.
The Oscars are very, very, I mean, they use that accounting firm or whatever to protect the votes and everything.
Yeah.
I think that the Emmys is quite strict.
You know how much that would suck, though? You record your acceptance speech and don't win?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, that's what happened with the Mighty Marvel Geeks. Like, for the last, I don't know how many years, I know at least 4 years. We've had to know that we made the finals. Mm-hmm. So when you make the finals, you get this notice that we need you to record and accept. So we will record the acceptance.
Wait, and then you're like, oh, crap.
Oh well. So yeah. So.
Yay! Congratulations to everyone else.
Right, so and you have to make sure it's within them a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. There you go.
They might, but I think a lot of it'll just be pre-recorded anyway. There's no reason for them to have anything live at this point.
No.
Just pre-record it and show it. And that way they can stick to a timeline too. If the Emmys is supposed to take 2 hours, then that way, boom, it can take 2 hours and they're done. There's no excuse.
No one goes over time.
Exactly. Not that it matters, because so many people are working from home. It doesn't matter if you go over time on a Sunday now.
Well, that's true. And then you can't have an excuse to be drunk and screw people's names up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you can. Anyway.
Yeah. You know, hey.
No, because it's called voiceover.
Yeah, you can have someone else do the voice double to fix it.
That's right.
Be recorded.
That's the main news for this week anyway.
Well, there was one I wanted to bring up, because talking about Skype shows. We saw that new Muppet show. What is it, Muppets Go or something like that?
Oh, no, you watched it. I was too busy reading about werewolves.
I mostly enjoyed it because I like Muppets, and it's cool to see that they're still trying to figure out how to make the Muppet show.
You are gassy.
Because of what it was originally, being the big variety show, they're trying to figure out how that translates to TV today.
That's fine. I'm getting gassed right here.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily work very well, though.
Not the way they're trying. Now, they tried it with the Muppet Show, or the Muppets. What was that one they did, like, 6-7 years ago?
The Muppets, I think it was.
Was it just the Muppets?
Yeah.
You could see then they were trying to do it again, but do the format of, like, a talk show, which kind of, I don't think they gave it enough time, I think it was. It seemed like it was getting better the farther they went.
They were trying to do the mockumentary/talk show thing because they were, you know, following people around behind the scenes as if they were a documentary crew.
Right. Yeah.
And then they had the talk show stuff going on, and people just didn't get it.
No.
When it was, because it was the Muppets. Like, and again, I think it's kind of happened again in this instance because they're trying to give you a bit of what the original show was like. Cause there's a lot of guests.
Mm-hmm.
This first episode had RuPaul and Taye Diggs and some chef. I don't remember her name because I didn't recognize her.
Yeah.
But I mean, it had multiple people, so that kind of made it interesting. But the way it was done was just, first of all, I thought it was a little choppy. I don't know why, but I think the original Muppet Show worked really well because you had the behind the scenes stuff in between all the skits.
Yeah. There wasn't enough of that. They had that on here, but it wasn't enough.
No, it was, and it was awkward because a lot of it was Scooter uploading videos.
Yeah.
And, which was fine because, I mean, obviously he'd be the one to do it. But it was, you know, him and Kermit talking and like, are you going to upload the episode? Did you upload that one? Did you do this? And I don't know. It just felt a little distant. It didn't feel like the characters felt like they always used to.
Right. Yeah.
First of all, I don't think he had enough Fozzie. Fozzie showed up for like 2 seconds during the RuPaul interview and that was it.
Yeah.
Ralph never showed up at all.
They didn't have time. They only had, what, 4 segments total? Because it's a half-hour show.
You had Gonzo showing up, though. Kermit was there. There was a lot of focus on Miss Piggy, though. There was too much. Her segment was too long. It really was.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be style, but it said sty at one point.
Yeah, lifestyle.
Lifestyle, Miss Piggy's lifestyle. It was cute. It was a cute idea because we all know she's full of herself and she's perfect and she's the princess and all that. But it got a little tiring with how long it was.
Yeah.
And maybe kids would like it more for that, but it didn't really get me. And then, of course, she was doing a whole Instagram thing outside at one point.
Whoa.
And it was during a set.
That was during Kermit and Walter's segments. Walter's the kid intern guy that they've been working with Kermit here and there.
And so Kermit was teaching him how to photobomb. And then he was like, you know, you have to pick your subject. You have to know what you're doing and blah, blah, blah. He's telling him all these things. And so they went outside to give it a try. And Walter chose Miss Piggy. And Kermit's like, no, no.
That's not who you want to photobomb.
Yeah, and, you know, things went how they would with Miss Piggy when you interrupt her doing anything.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, no.
So that's the part kids would love.
Yeah.
I think, well, that's, I'm not sure. Like that, I said earlier when we were talking, I'm not positive about who the audience is because it didn't seem kind of quirky and adult humor enough to get enough adults.
Right.
And it's also not immature enough to get enough kids.
Yeah.
And it's kind of stuck in the middle there for maybe nostalgia value, but it's not going to last on that.
I'm hoping, like a lot of TV. What was that, Kylan?
Is it perfect for the tweens then, I guess? Or
I don't know maybe. If the tweens would care.
I'm wondering if, hopefully, this, like a lot of TV that takes a couple of weeks to figure out exactly what it's doing. I'm hoping, because being on Disney Plus and nothing else out there, they're going to give them the whole run.
Yeah.
Before they decide what they're going to do. So right. I'm hoping you give them a couple of weeks, let them fit into this and play with it a little bit and to see what happens. I'm wondering if they should just spend the money, hire some of the original Muppet writers to help them figure out what they're doing. Because it's like a lot of these, it feels like it's Disney trying to figure out how you do the old Muppets. And it doesn't feel like the original Muppet writers or anybody involved in Henson Studios is in it. I know some of the performers are, because I looked at the list. I saw Mike Quinn was in there doing some of the Muppet stuff. And he was worked back on the original Muppet Show and Star Wars and everything else.
Right.
So it's like some of the performers are there, but I'm wondering if the writing could use some help of the originals Muppet writers and producers just to give them the feel of what it is, what made the Muppet special.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem to have the fun factor.
Yeah. It could have also been time frame. Trying to do the original Muppet Show now may not work. You may not be able to pull it off. You may have to come up with something totally new.
True.
But then again, they've done that for years with all the movies. But that doesn't translate to TV as well. Unless you're going to do an actual scripted TV series starring the Muppets. Now, that may work. Do an actual episodic TV series starring the Muppets doing other things where they're playing like a private eye or something. You know what I'm saying?
Don't try so hard to kind of capture the magic from the old show that gave you all the skits and stuff.
Right. Write a family sitcom and actually just, it happens to star the Muppets.
Right. So
that might work. Cause the movie, like I said, the movies have worked.
Right. Right. And like you said, it, you know, maybe in a few episodes, it'll kind of pick up a little and, mm-hmm. and something. and part of it, maybe part of it is the choice of of guest stars. Like, I didn't feel like there was much in the way of chemistry with the guests at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. It's, RuPaul was just like, I don't know.
He was like, lost RuPaul the whole time, it seemed like.
Yeah.
There was too much stuff going on.
Well, I mean, first of all, he couldn't act like himself anyway.
No.
You know,
no.
So he was basically being interviewed by Kermit, and he was just kind of like giving these little short answers, and then all these other Muppets started showing up, and he didn't know what to do.
Now, the one with Taye Diggs with Miss Piggy seemed like there was fine, but once again, he didn't say much. You didn't see any of actual him.
Right. It was more the joke of the face slapping massage, because you knew Miss Piggy was going to get her face smacked out. Like, it just, you knew that was coming when Taye Diggs got these little pats on the cheek, and then you knew Miss Piggy was basically going to get punched in the face.
Which even though they were Muppets, that was a little rough.
It was.
Especially the thumps you're hearing. I mean, it felt like you were caving in the head of this puppet.
Probably were. Hey, at least they're not screaming about killing a $2 million puppet.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. It's going to be a matter of chemistry and them kind of hitting the right spot, especially with the humor. Like, there wasn't – it just kind of – a lot of it fell flat to me. It's not that it was a horrible show and it wasn't like a big time suck or anything, because there's only one episode at a time and it's really only about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
So – you know, it's not that big a deal, but I am hoping for improvement, put it that way. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if they would go full-on old-school variety show like the original one was, if they could actually pull that off, because there is nothing else like that out there right now.
See, I think that would be fun.
Yeah. And bring in modern – I mean, they would have to be very, very selective on what artists they bring in musically. Right. Because there's a lot of artists that won't change anything, and that stuff that you can't put on, you know what I mean? And you don't want to put just like Disney music.
There's plenty of them out there who have radio edits of their songs.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's a matter of will they do it, you know?
Right. But I think that may have been one thing that was missing too. There was no musical segment.
Yeah.
That almost felt there should have been.
There hasn't been for years. There hasn't been for years.
Should at least have been like a Muppet version of a music video,
right?
Like, I think that would have worked.
Yeah,
you know what?
I watched it. I love the band.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's if you get a chance on HBO Max, it's aimed at a younger crowd. But the one I think they're doing it right. I've only seen a couple episodes. Is that new Elmo talk show they're doing on there, the Not So Late Show? They hit it right on that one. It's weird because it is in a straight up talk show with the band and having guests on there, but it's Elmo as the as the actual star of the show.
I'm not purposely watching an Elmo show.
I can't watch
it. But they're hitting the right notes that this, I think, should be hitting. Because it feels like a Jimmy Fallon show or one of those.
Okay. Yeah, those aren't usually funny anyway to me.
But I'm just saying that they're actually hitting the way that it should be hitting for their, you know what I mean? I mean, it's still kids' humor and stuff like that, but it's not Sesame Street.
Yeah. Now we know what Ken watches on a regular basis.
I've only seen like three of them. I had to watch I had to watch Batman when he was on it. They had Batman as a guest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
whatever.
He lost me when he had like the Jonas Brothers on there. I don't know why.
Let's move on to what else we watched this week. A movie that's for a couple of weeks now on Netflix is a Netflix original. Literally a kick-ass action movie.
Yes.
Old Guard.
Yes.
I was shocked how much, because I read the volume one and two, I think, of the comic after I watched the movie.
Okay.
I was shocked how much of a literal translation it was from the comic to the movie. I mean, lines taken off the bubbles in the comic were actually in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, there was obviously some changes, but.
Our comic book guy actually recommended it as a good movie, a good adaptation, because he had read it too, and he said it's such a precise adaptation that he hasn't seen one that good in a long time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they modernized it some from where it was, but other than that, it's almost a line for line.
Now, if for those who don't know, I mean, we'll try not to give too many spoilers, but it's difficult considering the subject of the movie. But this is a movie about essentially immortal warriors. They're led by a warrior called Andy. It's played by Charlize Theron. And they're essentially a group, they're now in modern day, a group of mercenaries. Some mm-hmm. have been alive for hundreds of years, others potentially thousands of years. And they're recruited in this movie to basically for an emergency mission.
Mm-hmm.
And their abilities to come back to life are exposed because it was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of them getting back at the one who set them up and trying to figure out why they needed this information. And there's, not surprisingly, big business trying to monetize these powers.
Yeah.
And figure out how they work, and they want to do experiments on them. So essentially it ends up as a rescue mission for themselves.
Mm-hmm. now in this, in the comic book and in this, the company's name is Merrick. Isn't there actually a pharmaceutical company called Merrick?
There is,
yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It makes this very interesting.
Yeah, I looked at it, I was like, isn't that a real company? Yeah, it's, yeah, so.
And in case you didn't know, the graphic novel, the comics are written by Greg Rucka, and he is known for his hard action.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So I've been a fan of Greg Rucka since the early 2000s. He wrote a series called Queen and Country, which was more or less an adaptation of an old British spy series called The Sandbaggers. And so, number one, he does gritty action, like, amazingly well. He does strong female characters mm-hmm. with the same level of skill. And the other thing is that something that I really like about him is that he's able – some writers will write a female character, and the thing is basically they're almost like a male character. It's just that they're a female. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do that. I don't understand that level, like how he's able to do that. But pretty much anything – if Greg Rucka's name is on it, I'm going to like it. That yeah. I'll just be honest with you. Like, well, he has not done anything wrong.
Yeah.
Like almost 20 years I've been reading his stuff.
When it comes to comics, for me, though, for me, it's hit or miss, because sometimes I like what he's done, some stuff, it's just not for me. But I'm not as big on the gritty, grim and gritty as I am on the, like, heroic, old-school, campy superhero stuff.
Right.
So that's it. But, see, he has done both, though. He does both well, depending on what he's writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this one was definitely the gritty.
this movie is, it's definitely hardcore, it's straight-up action, but at the same time has a good story,
mm-hmm.
but also a realistic story.
Yeah.
Like, just because they're immortal, it doesn't suddenly make it this big sci-fi story.
No.
It's just something that they just happen to be.
Right.
And it helps them in terms of trying to do good in the world, trying to, you know, rescue people or save this person, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Their levels of experience go back so far that they're able to do certain things, but it also questions how they can still accomplish this in present day when, like, they address the fact that you can't hide.
Right.
If you're doing this sort of thing, if you're mm-hmm. going on mission, there's cameras everywhere. There's people taking photos all the time. Mm-hmm. There's tracking on the web. There's all kinds of stuff that mm-hmm. you can be found.
Right.
They keep saying how, as the time goes on, as tech gets better, their job becomes so much harder because they cannot let anybody. And in the comic books, you see this a lot more of why they have to hide what they do or who they are.
Because A, they're as old as they are, but it also turns into almost a butterfly effect. But instead of doing negative, it's actually doing positive mm-hmm. without them even realizing it until the end.
Yeah, for them creating hope. But in the comic books,
hope. They're saving people that are changing the world.
Right.
But, even if it's a few generations mm-hmm. after they save that person.
Well, in the comics, though, they get a lot more into why you cannot tell your family or any of your friends. You got basically cut off ties from all of that. Because eventually they're not going to believe that you can't give this to them. You'll end up hating you because you're living and they all have to die. It's the way they're presenting it. Unlike with the Highlander, the sad part was, being immortal, you have to watch your loved ones die. In this one, it's the fact that you cannot help them and they don't accept it.
Or you have the ones where, like, when Duncan or even when Connor, when the two of them became immortal, because at the time for them, that culture was so religious, they were ostracized. No, they were basically kicked out
mm-hmm.
because
they were witches.
That. or, you know, or it's, or now at least in the '80s, you saw that they were able to trace Connor through the signatures. Cause you know, but think of that even more so now.
I know. And that's why they show that, especially at the end when they showed all the various newspaper photos and things where, you know, someone's tracking it, just noticing faces in the background. They don't even have to be in the foreground. Yeah. They're able to catch this.
And that actually translates to what we're dealing with in reality right now also with look at this disease and contact tracing and finding out who have you talked to in the last 6 months.
Right.
Exactly.
So, what you have? So,
but, I mean, it made sense that they needed, by the end, they needed someone present day on their team to track the technology, someone who knew what was going on.
Yeah, because they've been keeping up as much as they can, but they still have a hard time keeping up because tech is moving so fast.
And they have all these missions to focus on.
Right.
You know, they can't necessarily take the time to say, oh, we were in this place, we're going to have to go and check the recordings and check the security footage and delete it. No, they don't have time for that because they got to move on.
No.
That's where that guy's going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need someone to come in and erase things.
Right. I mean, there are cameras everywhere. I mean, on every street corner in businesses. Mm-hmm. Just or like that random selfie.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and she made sure to take the picture for them, and then he actually deleted the photo that had her in it.
That guy had them traced back over 100 years already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When he was taking pictures from the wars.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers. Natural disasters. Yeah.
Well, that's for most of us listening to this and our geeksters out there, we're used to there being cameras all over the place. But just take a quick look elsewhere in the world. Some place like London, England. There, if I remember right, there's not a 12-inch section of London that's not on a camera somewhere.
Right.
Right.
Because they purposely have put cameras everywhere.
It's because all the drunken people coming through,
mm-hmm.
all the tourists. Have you seen the tourist lights?
If you think about it, like, that's something to get used to if you've been alive for hundreds or thousands of years. Like, you have to keep up with the technology. You have to keep up with what's going on. And you're just like, you know, I was doing this over there. How did they catch me? Oh, that's because there was an ATM over on this corner that someone was using at the same time, taking a shot of them, and you were in the background.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly.
And all of it is connected to the same internet.
Exactly. And so, I think the movie was pretty realistic in that regard. They didn't discount the fact that, oh, that doesn't matter. They're still doing all these things and no one will recognize them. I mean, the whole premise of the movie was that they got busted. Like, someone recognized what was going on.
Right.
And I think it worked really well. And I like the world that they created for this without having to explain it. Like, there's no explanation as to why these people are immortal, but you don't need it.
Right.
That ends up annoying me a lot of times with this type of movie because of the way movies and stuff are written. When I see a movie like this, I'm automatically thinking, okay, how did this happen? Because I go back to something like Highlander. I've watched Immortal Warriors for a long time. It's like, I want to know, how does their world work compared to other stuff, you know?
I think it's just one of those things that just is.
And that's in the movie, that's what it is.
Highlander just is. Yeah. Like, they don't ever say. And I do like, one of the things I like about this one as opposed to Highlander is that it runs out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know when. You get your time. Your time is your time.
Yeah. And I don't think they use it in the movie, but in the book, you hear them say they're immortal until they're not.
They said in the movie.
Right.
Yeah. Is it in the movie too? Okay. Which is a real weird concept, because then you don't get to live like you're going to live forever because you don't know when it's going to stop.
Yeah.
Right.
And you also see more with Joe and Nikki. Because by that point, they also, that's when they figured out Andy is no longer immortal.
Yeah.
So when they were both getting shot up, they were both losing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what I was going to get is with those two, the fact that they were enemies eons ago, and then they started, you know, they basically killed each other how many
times?
That
was an interesting relationship.
They went from enemies to more than anything.
Yeah.
Because that quote that Joe said, everyone is just beside with talking about it. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, when they're in the van.
No.
Huh? Yeah. No? I thought it was when they were in the truck. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, the one where they were strapped down and he was telling the other guy he's an idiot.
Oh. Yeah, they had a couple of monologues between the two of them that were talking about that. Basically being lovers forever.
Well, not just that here.
Oh, Vicky's got the quote here.
It was when they were strapped down.
What's he say?
And it says here, Joe declares, "You are a child and infant. You are mocking and thus infantile. He is not my boyfriend. This man is more to me than you can dream. He is the moon when I am lost in the dark and warmth when I am shiver in the cold. He kisses, stills me, even after a millennia." And there's more to it, but that's just the beginning of it.
Yeah, imagine that you found the love of your life 1,000 years ago and you're still together.
Right.
Right.
I mean, and that it, really, if you're the type of person looking for that, it's kind of the only way you can do it because, like we said before, everyone else dies.
Yeah, right.
So, you sit there and watch everyone else die. And I think when it comes to the dying and the immortal part, that's another thing that I liked. It was kind of a realistic sort of, like, they still feel the pain from it.
Yeah.
There's no weird mystical thing going on. Like, this is... It's not. There's no other thing you need an explanation for. They get shot, they die. A few minutes later, they're back again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, I don't know. I liked that part because it was just kind of like boom, boom. And I think partly because it reminded me of Jack Harkness from Torchwood and Doctor Who. Like, Captain Jack has always been like that. He's dead and he's back.
Yeah.
Like, but it always hurts.
Yeah.
one way or another, it hurts.
That's so one thing. Go ahead.
No, I think that's kind of why I was able to get into this so easily was because it just reminded me of Captain Jack so much.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing I've noticed.
I hope we get more.
Oh, we better because the way this was set up. And the next part of the story, if they touch into it, they left it out of this on purpose. The other one that ended up dying.
Yes.
They left her out of this, I think, on purpose. They mentioned that she was there, but that's all they did. They didn't say anything about her death or anything else, but it'll be great to see them get into that if they go to the next movie.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, I have to admit, like, this is probably the first movie where I've actually seen an Iron Maiden being used. Like, you've seen movies like, you'll see it open and that sort of thing, or you kind of can see it closed, but that one scene where she's just dying and waking up and dying.
Well, it wasn't exactly an Iron Maiden because it didn't have spikes on the inside.
Right, okay,
it was meant to be like an iron sarcophagus, but.
Yeah, it was the idea of Iron Mask, but for the whole body.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just...
Well, they did... The director of the movie, Gina Prince-Bythewood, she actually said... She kind of hinted at the sequel, saying that it would be based on the graphic novel. And in terms of what Rucka had written, with Quinn rearing her head and how that causes issues, but also grounding it in the problems of the world and them tackling... how things are addressed. And Charlize Theron said that they basically went into doing this movie already talking about a sequel.
Yeah.
Nice.
So.
Well, with looking at the end of this movie, you couldn't not talk about the sequel.
Right.
It's another one that has a huge setup, and you're hoping that this hits.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. And interestingly, if you've seen the movie, whether or not you've read the comic, Netflix actually released a featurette to go along with it after the movie came out. It is on YouTube, and it basically tells the story of each of the members you meet in the show, in the movie, through the ages. And like everything you learn in the featurette is stuff that you can find out in the comics, but it's not in the movie.
Right.
Basically, it confirms and expands on what you know from the movie, that Andy essentially acted like Xena for a while.
Yeah.
And traveled the world and fought for good as the Eternal Warrior and such. And it reveals that basically she's over 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
You don't get a specific number in the movie. They just say she's really old.
Well, as she says, she doesn't remember. She has lost track because it's been so long.
Right.
You also get like the full names of the other characters, like Joe and Nikki and Booker.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that that Booker's real last name is Le Livre, because Livre is book in French.
Yeah, that's
and that's
right.
Why he
yeah.
gets called Booker.
Yeah.
But you find out, you get to see a little glimpse of Joe and Nikki meeting in the Crusades and the Siege of Jerusalem in 1099. And Le Livre, who was actually killed for his attempted desertion of the Napoleonic army in 1812, So you find out basically when they all first got killed.
Right.
To discover they were immortal. So it's a good, it's only like 5 or 6 minutes long. It's a good little featurette to watch, though. To, it mm-hmm. basically just takes you through the years. And you get a few clips that aren't in the movie. You actually get a clip of when Andy and Quinn first essentially discover that someone can die.
Right.
That one of them can die because it was the it was another warrior they were with.
Yeah.
And he got injured and his wounds weren't healing. And it shows Andy and Quinn dealing with him mm-hmm. When that was happening, which you don't actually see in the movie.
Right.
So it's got a little bit. It was a good little watch anyway mm-hmm. to get a little more on it.
Cool.
Yeah. So overall, though, this was an awesome movie. If you've not read the comics, it's still an awesome movie on its own.
Mm-hmm. It is.
They give you enough information that you get a really good feel on it. And the stuff that they did change from the comic to the movie were basically touchstones that put it in a certain time frame.
Right.
The book was done, 10 years ago or something like that, or a little bit more? So the world has changed in that time, so your modern touchstones, they had to change in this. Other than that, yeah. It's the exact same story.
And the good thing about this, because a lot of people don't like hearing that something's a comic book movie, this does not feel like a comic book movie.
No.
There's no like completely unbelievable special effects. There is a lot of hardcore hand-to-hand fighting that is pretty amazing in this movie. The mm-hmm. The fight choreography is awesome.
It really is. Yes.
That's one thing that we've talked about. Keanu Reeves has changed from comedy to action. So Charlize Theron has done a very similar, just instead of from comedy, she went from like drama to a straight action starlet.
Right. And the thing is, she, I talked about it last week, the Comic-Con panel that she did, the interview with her, that's something to go back and watch. She talks about the old guard in that panel. And she talks about the fact that she likes to, it's not so much that she made a conscious decision to move to action movies, but she found that there were finally characters that she wanted to play
mm-hmm.
because way back, it used to be that if a woman was going to become a warrior or if she was going to seek revenge or something, it was always because something happened to her family, mm-hmm. something happened to her man, whatever. In these cases, in this movie and in other movies that she's done, the woman's just flat out a warrior. She doesn't need a reason. She just is.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's not a reason based on anyone else. It's just who she is. And
right.
She plays those roles so well. And she did a really great job in this role.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing in that interview she talks about is the fighting styles and the sort of preparation she had to do. So mm-hmm. if you want to find out, I would highly recommend going and watching that and getting those tidbits from her.
And like we said last week, the nice thing about Comic-Con at home this year is they're all up there, and they're not planning on taking them down, as far as I know.
That's right, exactly.
Right, so it's there. Exactly.
So you can go back and see it.
I mean, she's probably talked about the same sort of thing in some other recent interviews, too, because of the movie coming out. So mm-hmm. there might be something in an Entertainment Weekly or something recently, I don't know. But yeah, I just thought, like, watching some of those fights, there was, like, when she was first fighting the youngest warrior, I guess mm-hmm. you could say, on the plane.
Yeah.
That was a pretty awesome fight.
That was. Yeah, that was.
And but there was a lot to the whole thing. I mean, they are mercenaries. There's weaponry involved a lot. But for all the big guns they have, there's a hell of a lot of fist fighting and kicking, et cetera, going mm-hmm. on well, than right. there is with guns.
What I really loved was the opening scene of them going in to do the first hostage situation thing. They're all loaded up with these modern huge guns and all this guns and grenades and everything else. They also have their original swords and axes strapped to them also.
Yes.
Whatever their original sword of choice was, they still carry it.
The other thing I loved about Andy's character, oh my God, that axe of hers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, if it's taken away from her, she'll find another axe.
Right.
When you get to the end, when she finds that fire axe, it's like, okay, any axe will do.
Right. Yep.
She'd rather have hers, but...
That's absolutely their fighting style. They go for the swords and the axes. You can tell they would rather not go for the guns,
mm-hmm.
but they do it as an equalizer because, you know, everyone else has got guns. They have to.
Right.
Yeah.
But obviously, the way they dropped all their weapons, it dropped all the, you know, tech machinery, and mm-hmm. went straight up old school,
right?
Hacking people away. Right. That was fun.
Exactly.
And that first recovery scene was just kind of brutal.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're an action fan, if you're a fantasy, I would call this action fantasy more than sci-fi.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a heavy action fantasy because there is a magical element to this. Somehow they keep waking up.
Yeah, it's almost a straight up action movie. Like it's just got that little thing of them being immortal.
Mm-hmm.
And not always entirely immortal.
It's the one thing they needed to separate them from other action movies.
Yeah.
Because how many times you see that the action movie's pretty much the same thing, just new stars and lots of guns.
Right, exactly. Right.
The story's been done the same every time.
And in so many action movies, the heroes never get injured. In this one, oh my god, they get injured.
They get injured all the time.
Especially because they keep getting killed, but even once they discover that, you know, Andy's not recovering, you know, it's not like all of a sudden she's like, oh yeah, I'm feeling better though, so it's okay, I'll keep fighting. No, she's not feeling better, but she's got to keep fighting.
And they all step in to catch the bullets.
Yeah, and them becoming human shields.
Yes, that was pretty well done, really.
Some of that was painful.
they definitely thought through it. They did a really good job. Like, honestly, I would have been willing to see this on the big screen. Like, this would have been worth it.
I think this may have been heading for the big screen before all of this happened. Because Netflix has been doing that, especially about August. Because remember, Hitman's Bodyguard dropped in August.
Yep.
There's a couple of other big-name movies that Netflix did that they dropped in the August area. So I'm wondering if this one, it wasn't heading for theaters before the pandemic. They just hadn't started any of the marketing for it, so it was a real quick switch.
Right.
So... But overall, like you've heard from all of us geeksters, this was a movie to check out. It's on Netflix. You all have it already. Watch it and let us know what you thought.
Yep.
So anything else before we wrap this up, guys?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay, well, remember, geeksters, we will be back in 2 weeks and back to Netflix again to see to check out The Umbrella Academy, which sneak
all
peek. What, Don?
All the time.
Yeah.
You got nothing. Do but watch streaming services.
Well, and that sneak peek, I had a blast with that one.
Oh! So,
Vicky and I watched it all the way through, so.
Yeah, me too.
It was awesome, and you will hear all about it in 2 weeks. So you got 2 weeks to catch up on it.
And it's 10 episodes, and they're less than an hour an episode, so no excuses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was it was a lot faster to go through than I thought. So
I feel bad for Ben.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that here in 2 weeks.
Just say a name. We all know if you watched the first season, you all know he's dead.
So, but also, Vicky and I, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, so we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks probably, is that new Transformers War for Cybertron. Yep. We'll talk about that coming up, too. Vicky's got spoilers that are cracking her up, so she's got to stop. She's got to not say anything at the moment. So, but other than that, let us know what you thought of the Old Guard, guys. www.geekwatch1.com. Anywhere, everywhere, all social media, we are GeekWatch1. If you put us into a search bar and don't find us, let us know and Miss Dawn will take care of the problem.
I have my own swords and axes.
That's right. And her axe is huge. So, you can also find us on our network homes, the Weebie Geeks at Weebie Geeks, or the Weebie Geeks Podcast Collective at WeebieGeeksPC.com. And the Tangibound Network at TangiboundNetwork.com. You can also find our friends Charlie Murphy and Stray Dog and the Akron Pickle at Cafe 388 and at Stray Dog Akron. Look them up on all social media. Also, you can find our friends at the Pop Insider, the Toy Insider, and the Toy Box. And that is actually the names of their websites. So, for Kylan and Dawn and Vicky and myself, just remember...
No matter where you go... There you are.